the snackers.
So I'm gonna give people 1 minute and then force us to begin. Let me just be official here and introduce our speaker for this afternoon. I was reflecting on the fact that I mentioned that Brett was a lawyer before he became a minister. I could actually see some good connections between the work of a lawyer and the work of a priest, I think, actually. But Brett was actually way back in the day, for those who don't know, he was a landscaper.
Landscape architect.
Architect before he became a minister. For how many years?
Seven.
7 years. So I think I could kind of see a connection between those two things as well. So looking around the room, I think you all know who Mr. Heinrichs is, but he's currently the pastor up in Kitchener, Canada, where he's been there for a good, 55 years?
Yeah.
60 years? Feels like that.
17.
17 years. Obviously, his wife Kathy is here, and they've got 6 kids, all kids here this year?
Yep.
Nice. So I'll hand things over to Brad, and she would join me as well.
Thank you. So just a few introductory things. I struck that I've been in Carindale 17 years, and I was counting up with my wife. This is our 17th consecutive year here at this camp, which has so many blessings over those 17 years that I think these camps are critical to the lifeblood of the church for reasons Brett outlined yesterday. And he was talking about the number of people here. And this year, I think Jamie told me the final count he had was 178, which I think is a record for this camp. And 4 years ago, after this camp, I started one in Canada called Living Waters under the same type of mold as this camp, and we set a record this year up there with 86 people. So if you put those two camps together where solid discussion and instruction from the Word is happening, that is 264 people taking time out of their summer to talk about the Lord's Word. So really good stuff, I think, happening there, and it's exciting to me. This topic for me is based on a little phrase one of my daughters used. So before I get to that phrase, what do you think in marriage is the biggest problem when things are going wrong? Is it on the love side or the wisdom side or something else?
Love side.
Which would make it the wife's fault, probably.
Money.
Money? I think money is a secondary thing that raises its head.
Communication.
Communication.
Looking to the Lord together.
Looking to the Lord together.
Or having religion as a central focus in your marriage.
Dominating.
Lots of good reasons, and I'm going to come to something that you're probably going to say, boy, this is the most simple concept I've ever heard, and how are we going to talk about it for an hour? And we'll find out, because I do have a packet. For those people who make fun of my packets, I'll tell you why I give packets. I give packets because early on in my training, I did more talking and less packets, and a disturbing thing happens if you have catchy phrases. I would find people would take one of my catchy phrases, and that would be the only thing they remembered from the presentation. And many of my catchy phrases might be totally inaccurate or even misleading. And so if those were the only takeaways that people had, I found that wasn't beneficial. So the packets are thick and they are rich in doctrine, so that if after you leave here and all the words that I've said seem questionable to you, they might well be, but you can hang your hat on the things that the Lord says. So that's what I want you to take home. You will find none of my words in there, just the ones from the Lord. So that's going to be what you take home, and that's why I make big, fat, hairy packets. So here's the phrase that my daughter gave that it just happened at a time where I was dealing with a lot of struggling marriages. She was little, we were at the pool, and she was going to learn how to dive just off the edge of the pool. And she would go like this and just, you know, belly flop, belly flop, belly flop. And so we're all there, older siblings, dad and mom, and, you know, you got to put your hands like this, you got to tuck your head, you got to make sure you're going in at a 45, and we're giving her instructions, and she's just belly flop, belly flop, belly flop, and we give her more instruction, and we tell her more things, belly flop, and she finally, in a little ball of rage, is like, I have the know-how, I just don't have the do-how. And yes, it was Denali. And anybody who knows Denali, she does have little ball of rage moments. That was one of them. But it happened at a time, and it has continued to happen. I've found when people have marriages that are struggling and they come in, what do you think they often say is the problem? The other person, we fell out of love, we don't love each other anymore, this person doesn't know me, so on and so forth. They go to the love and wisdom side, but then as you listen to them, what you begin to find is, I'm pretty convinced the basics of marriage, you know, in Brett's presentation the other day, and then Matthew's, and then Ryan's, this isn't rocket science in many ways. It's a husband and a wife looking to the Lord, trying to shun evils and sins, and if you can do those without all the, you know, dive into the doctrines and look at the shades, that's the basic of human relationships, marriage or otherwise. And what I was beginning to find is it's really what they don't have is the do-how. They're not doing. When people are dating, courting, madly in love, the beginning of marriage, why is it so happy? They're doing everything. They're opening the doors, they're buying the roses, they're cooking the special meals, they're going out of their way to show their partner that they would do anything for them. Do anything for them. And then over time, couples get lazy and they stop doing. And when they stop doing the marital things, suddenly we don't love each other anymore. And it's like, is it that you don't love each other anymore, or have you stopped doing loving things for each other?
There's a very selfish notion that's taken hold recently. My needs are being fulfilled.
I say that all the time.
Why do you think that's selfish then?
Yes. But you do know in a marriage when you're being lazy, I think. And then we begin to make a whole bunch of excuses about why they don't know. But I really believe most of the people I've had in my office actually know how they should be behaving. Yes, sometimes there are some communication skills one partner might not be as great at or things like that. But for the most part, it's just they're not doing the things that they should do. So with that, the packet. Now, my goal with this packet, I see looks of terror on some people's faces. My goal with these packets is not to read all these. There are a few highlights, but then I really do want to have a discussion with you and get some of your insights, either in marriages you know about without being specific, or yours, and you could phrase it in so it doesn't get into uncomfortable sharing of, I know a couple who, and it could be you, but we won't know that. But these areas where you find you trip up, where you're not, you fall into patterns where you're not doing those things that you know you should be doing in marriage, and how to get yourself out of those downward spirals where you're not doing the things you know you should be doing. And so the thing, it really tied into the worship talk I gave. We have love and we have wisdom, but this first set of passages talk about those are nothing. Are you short there? Everybody have one? They're really nothing if they're not realized in use, in doing. So we're going to talk about that. Love and wisdom without the good of use are nothing. Love, wisdom, and use are three things which cannot be separated. If separated, they are nothing. We need the completion. When love by means of wisdom is expressed in use, then it really is, because then it actually exists. So love and wisdom are concepts that we talk about, but if they remain on that theoretical plane, they really come to naught. They come to nothing. The next one, unless the will and understanding, that is affection and thought, as well as charity and faith, clothe and wrap themselves in works or deeds. Now notice this phrasing in the next couple passages. Whenever possible, they are like something airy which passes away, or like phantoms in the air which perish, and that they first become permanent in man and a part of his life when he practices and does them. Next one, charity and faith are merely fleeting mental abstractions unless, wherever it is possible, they are expressed in works and exist together in them. Loving means the like as doing, since he that loves does. For to love is to will, since everyone wills what he interiorly loves, and to will is to do, since everyone does that which he wills when he is able. And the last one on this page, the Lord alone conjoins man to himself, and this he does by man's knowing, understanding, willing, and doing these commandments. For what does willing amount to if man, when he is able, does not do? So this is one of the things that in relationships, I'm talking a lot about marriage, but I think this could be a relationship you have with a sibling, with a good friend, whatever it is. We often, I think, tell ourselves lies that I really intend well to that person. An example I can remember is a husband saying he meant to get his wife an anniversary gift every year. Did he really intend to get her an anniversary gift, or was he fooling himself? Love, whenever it is possible, seeks to do. And so I think a lot of the time in relationships, if we're having difficulties, if things aren't working the way that we're saying, often it's we're simply not doing. If we really are intending something, we will strive to do that thing. Another one, and I'm tipping my hand here, this is a pastor's nemesis when you hear, "I meant to come to church today." Now, I'm going on, yes, there are sometimes, you know, Junior lost a leg and they're off at the hospital. That I totally get. But more often than not, when that repeatedly happens, I intended to, and it never happens, these passages have me thinking, are you really intending to do that, or are you telling yourself to make yourself feel better that you intended to do that when maybe you didn't really intend to do that in a meaningful way? And I think in marriages, that happens all the time. Yeah, well, I mean to be a better husband to my wife because everybody always addresses her as poor Kathy. But if I always just say I'm intending to be a better husband and yet my behavior never changes in a way, so any of you want to say, "Lucky Kathy," that would be wonderful to hear. Every now and again, that would be good. But I think so often we fool ourselves and we get ourselves off the hook in kind of this faith alone or even intending alone on the will side that, I want to be better, but we don't actually do it. Yes. Yeah. Did you have a hand up?
I was just saying, but you have to intend to regenerate. So, you know, it's the follow through. But in order to do well, you have to intend to do well to start off. You have to see that there's something to be done. It's not following through. It's the,
Correct. And that's where I think it is in the doing is the takeaway that I'm hoping people get out of this because, like I said, most of the stories that I hear when people are in there, it is when they are not doing the things that they already know they should be doing. And they're not doing them. And so instead of saying, I'm going to start doing those things, I'm going to start doing those good things, I'm going to stop doing those bad and hurtful things, they instead begin this process of trying to justify what they're already not doing that they know they should be doing. And I really think in the new church, I think often it's not so much we don't have the know-how, we might not have the do-how. So, yes. Yes, absolutely. Let's flip the page. No, this is good, because that's sort of where the trail leads. So the bottom of the paragraph at the top of page 2, dealing with the 6 commandments. Consequently, when man, through the last 6 commandments, remember those are your duties to the neighbor, conjoins himself to the Lord as if of himself, the Lord then conjoins himself to man through the first 3 commandments, which are that man must acknowledge God, must believe in the Lord, and must keep his name holy. This man does not believe, however much he may think that he does, unless the evils forbidden in the other table, that is, in the last 6 commandments, he abstains from as sins. So again, to me, this idea of you know, we love the Lord, but we don't actually act in a loving way towards any of the people around us is a lie we can tell ourselves over and over again. Okay, so the key to having a productive marriage. Remember, this is about the marriage of love and wisdom, and that gets to, it is what you do. Charity alone does not produce good works, still less does faith alone. Thus, it cannot be said that either charity or faith by itself produces any good works. All production is the result of both acting together, and is affected by the understanding from the will. The conjunction of charity and faith is like the marriage of a husband and wife. And that's where I think there's a beautiful passage. I think it's in Divine Providence, and I don't know why I don't have it in here, but it's the one that says, when you have a desire, an intention, a love, if it is genuine, it is going to search out in the understanding for the means to carry out its desire, its love. It's going to say, hey, I want to do something to make my wife happy for her anniversary. Search in the wisdom. What would make my wife happy for her anniversary? New dishwasher. No, that's not it. Keep searching. Find something that will make her happy, and that's all part of the process. But all that, I want to make her happy. How am I going to make her happy? Searching for that wisdom, it's still nothing unless it is actually done. Unless you finish that process, it is a fleeting mental abstraction. And that's where, again and again, I see in relationships, it so often comes down to the lack of execution, the actually doing the thing that you say you are intending to do. All right, so a bunch of passages on that. Yep. Yeah, we'll skip right over those, but they're there for you to take home in your thick packet. Here's another one that I don't know why I didn't stumble into this, but this whole thing of the relationship between good and truth. I love this series that really talks about truth becoming good. How does it become good? Doing it. When truth has been conjoined with good, it is no longer called truth, but good. Next number. By virtue of being willed and acted out, truth becomes good and is called the good of truth. Next number. Truth becomes good when it passes from the understanding into the will, and from the will goes forth into act. So it searches in that understanding, how am I going to do this thing to make her happy? And then the will actually brings it into act. To do good in this manner is Christian charity. Next number, truth is made into good when a person leads a life in keeping with that truth. Next number, the good of truth, when it is with anyone, is the good of life, for truth becomes good by a life according to it. And so on, and so on. So that whole section really, to me, completes this process. The marriage of love and wisdom is fulfilled in the things that we do. And I think we talked about this learning curve. Well, the practice in that silly example of, okay, I want to do something to make my wife happy for her anniversary. I search in my understanding, and my understanding says getting her a new kitchen appliance would delight her. And then I practice that, and there's a feedback loop. where I realized that maybe that wasn't the gift of choice and Hawaii would have been more well received. So if I really intend to make her happy, I have now learned something through the practicing of love and wisdom together, and I'm going to hone that. And I still have that intention that I want to make her happy, so I search again in my understanding, I have new insights, and again, by the practice, by the things that you do every day in your relationships, you will be producing good fruit and better fruit as time goes on through that process. So it just strikes me again and again, and I'm not preaching to people as though I do this better than you. I find it's true in my own marriage. When things are going well, it is generally because I am actually doing. I'm walking the walk. I'm acting like a good husband in the things that I do. And when things are not so smooth, it's usually because I'm telling myself the lie that I'm intending to make her happy, when the reality is I want me to be happy. And she just needs to step up and make that happen. And that's never a happy place when you're going at it from that thing. So really the doing is critical. All right, so here is getting to a section, and this is the main one I wanted to get through, and the rest can be hit or miss, because I want to open it up for some discussion. But act precedes, willing follows. This one was beat into me pretty soundly by my father, and I think with good effect, that you don't have to love it at first. You have to make yourself do it. And this gets into that topic of self-compulsion. So, and kissed him means an interior joining together brought about by love. This is clear from the meaning of kissing as joining together brought about by love. From this it is clear that the truth residing with man must first of all become truth in will and action. That is, become the good of truth before the joining together of the rational and the natural, or of the internal man and the external, can come about. Skipping to the next page. Therefore, when truths are translated into action, they are introduced step by step. Remember that example of actually trying to practice now. When truths are translated into action, they are introduced step by step into their beginning and into their end, that is to say, into charity towards the neighbor and love to the Lord, and as a consequence, truth becomes good, which is called the good of truth. Skipping, action comes first, then the desire for it in the person's will follows. For when a person is led by his understanding to carry out any action, he is at length led by his will to do it, till at last he has taken it on as an action performed habitually. So let's just finish out these ones and then we'll talk about that. Divine providence. It is a law of divine providence that a person put away as if of himself evils of sins and his external self, and that the Lord be able only then to put away the evils in the internal self. Notice the as if there. It's a law of providence that a person not be compelled by external means to think and will, thus to believe and love matters having to do with religion, but that a person bring himself to do so and at times compel himself. Man ought to compel himself to do what is good. Ought to compel himself to do what is good, to obey the things commanded by the Lord, and to speak truths. Subsection 4, let it be observed that in all self-compulsion to what is good, there is a certain freedom, which is not discerned as such while man is engaged in this self-compulsion, but it is still there within. There is a willingness within, and thus a freedom, from which, and for the sake of which, they compel themselves. That is to say, they do so for the sake of obedience to what the Lord has commanded, and for the sake of the salvation of their souls after death. That's the part that really strikes me in a marriage. And you get married and you make a covenant with your partner and with the Lord. You are signing up to live according to the laws of marriage that the Lord has prescribed. And so, yes, there are times where you may not feel very loving towards your spouse. And yet, the Lord has given you the ability in those instances, that whole chapter on simulations and conjugal love, to act in a proper way towards that person, even though you are not feeling it in the moment. And the amazing thing happens in most cases if you make that a pattern of behavior, that I am going to act in a good way towards my partner, even if I'm not necessarily feeling it. Do you think that will have a long-term positive effect on the marriage? Of course it will. There's one story, and it doesn't always work. But maybe some of you, how many have seen the movie Fireproof? I love the movie. I don't like the acting much. I saw a similar story in a magazine about a woman who, her husband was a bit of a beast, just not a nasty, nice guy. He was pretty nasty. They got in a lot of things. She finally got to the point where she decided, I can't change him. But I can change how I act towards him. And so she made a commitment that she would try for a year to always act in the best way possible that she could act. So every morning she would make him breakfast, even if he hadn't warranted it by his behavior. She just tried to act in a loving way as much as she could, and the story goes that somewhere around day 300, he ended up just broke down at the breakfast table weeping because he couldn't understand why she was treating him so well when he was not acting in kind. And she said, because I made a commitment to you when I married you, and I'm sticking to it, and it changed him. Took 300 days, but her pattern of always trying to act in a loving way, even, and you know she didn't feel it because he was being a jerk, it did manage to change him. And no, sometimes that might not work, but I think as a general principle, we can control what we do and say in a situation. And so I think we spend a lot of time thinking about how we can change our partner to be the person we want them to be, when we might more effectively look at what we are saying and doing and saying, I can do that. and it's not dependent on what they're doing. I can make the conscious decision to do the right thing. I can make the conscious decision to shun evils, not belittle, besmirch, talk back, demean, you know, all those things you can do. I can make the decision not to do those things, and I can also make the decision in kind to do the good things. I don't like doing the dishes, but I can do that. I don't like doing this. I can do that. And if we form those patterns, an amazing thing happens where we create the conditions then for that feeling we call love to flow in. Why? Because it is in the doing. That marriage of good and truth comes together in the doing, and then the Lord is able to flow in through those uses, and then we say, oh, we're in love again. You're not in love again, you're actually being loving, you're doing those things. Okay, so let me just close out by saying these other things that kill it. Desiring to dominate destroys, that's no secret. And here F goes back to that earlier theme, deeds reflect who we really are inside. In every deed which proceeds from a person, his whole nature is fully present as regards his mind or essential character. And this is the thing that I think we should reflect on. If we are doing, over time, our partner will see that we love them. If we are practicing those things we know the Lord would want us to do, and not doing those things we would know He would not want us to do, it will show in our deeds and actions. And they'll say, that is a partner who loves me. I can see it in everything about them. So are you just a head case? So there's this wonderful thing. The will seeks means and a ways of achieving its ends, which are the effects in the understanding, and there exposes itself to light in order to see not only the methods, but also the opportunities when and how it can realize itself in actions. And so I love that line about, if I really love my wife, I will be looking for opportunities when and how that can be realized in action. And imagine if you had a spouse that was doing that for you. You would feel well loved if they were looking for opportunities when and how their love for you could be realized in action. Okay, it says, however, so if a person, this is 375, top of page 6. So if a person merely had a good will or thought from charity without doing the good and performing useful deeds as a result of charity, would he not be like an isolated head or mind, which lacking a body could not continue in existence alone? Who from this can fail to see that charity and faith are not charity and faith, so long as they are in the head and mind and not also in the body? We read in chapel, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. It really, that marriage takes place in the doing and the things that we do. And we know, I read in that chapel, that the human inclination towards marriage goes hand in hand with religion at every step, and we know that the life of religion is to do that which is good. So I am going to stop there. Leaves us 20 minutes. And what I'm interested in is, one, any reactions to this idea? Do you think... Because I'm open to the idea that, yes, And I will acknowledge, sometimes I have been listening to a couple's story and I think it is a will problem. I think there is, that person is acting evilly and doesn't want to be in the marriage. So that can happen. I also acknowledge that sometimes it can be a wisdom problem. Sometimes they're just, clueless, or a beast, or something that they just don't have the skills. So sometimes it is a knowledge problem, but my experience in my brief 17 years is that more often than not, when I am listening to both sides, it most of the time is they have the know-how, they don't have the do-how. They're just not anymore practicing and living the way they should be, treating each other the way they should be. And if they were, they would find out that they felt in love still. So any thoughts? I'm going to throw it open.
I have a thought about with patients, because I happen to like immediate gratification. I had a friend once who was going through some of this, and we were talking about, we didn't know enough about the writings to go find it, we didn't know how to find it, but we knew about this pretend as if or act as if. And so his friend decided to do that, which was a good thing. But I would get a call about once a week, it's not working, it's not working, it's not working. And so they were trying to do it in their time instead of the Lord's time. And that was the lie again, I guess, yeah. Right? Looking more for, see, I'm doing the right thing, why aren't you? And
yeah.
That's tricky.
Yep. It is, because the nature, those charts of the joining, true love is reciprocal. And so it works so well with angels because you don't have to worry about that other piece. You know it's coming back. In this life, we're imperfect, and sometimes that feedback loop can be delayed, but we still have to do the right thing. Yep.
Similar, yeah. Are they the same?
I think he's saying is that act precedes willing follows same as the fake it until you make it principle. I would say similar in that I think fake it has a negative, disingenuous connotation. I would say a simulation in marriage is I made a commitment deep down. I have a love for my spouse, but right now I'm mad, I'm angry, I'm whatever, and yet the Lord has given me the ability to compel myself to act in a way other than I am immediately feeling. And so I don't think that's faking it in the disingenuous sense. It's, no, I really love my spouse and I want to get that across, and so I'm going to have to gut it out here. Joe and then Leanna?
Doesn't that same thing hold true for all of regeneration? You start out with a selfish will, and if you don't fake it, you're going to end up with a selfish
kid. Yes. Yeah, and I think also part of that, I mean, since the fall of the most ancient church, the Lord gave us this ability to mask what we're feeling. Why? So we can work out some of the uglier parts of our junk without it all being out on the table all the time.
This idea of faith to make it work, willing, following,
that if we act how we should, act in a good way, paired with shunning evils, like the Lord, when we shun evils, He is the one removing the evil.
Yeah.
We're just doing the act of shunning it. Do you think that in the same way, if you are shunning evils and doing good works, that He will remove the bad intention?
Yeah. I think so. If you're working from that, one passage says that the Lord can only flow into order because He is order itself. So when we, now I would say from a conscious decision, we, you know, our understanding from going to the Lord and His Word says, I should be doing this thing. I don't want to, if I'm honest with myself right now, but I should be doing this thing. In that orderly external, you're creating the conditions in which the Lord can flow in and bless it eventually, might not be immediately. I think one of those is, we had at one of our Canada Day celebrations, speaker many years back who talked about his parents making him go to church and how he didn't like that. And they gave, you know, the thing of, yeah, well, you're in our house, we're going to compel you until, you know, you learn to compel yourself kind of thing. And he went away to college and took the opportunity not to make himself go to church for a while. And what he realized was, here was the big freedom. I'm going to get to blow off church. He did for a little bit and realized he really missed it because he had set that pattern. And then when he no longer had it, suddenly he was like, oh, I kind of wish I was at church on Sunday. So I do think if you make yourself do the right thing, even when you might not feel it, eventually you're going to find that you do like it. Yep. Yep. Model it till you waddle it. There you go. Any other thoughts or reflections? Yes.
Another thing we've heard this week already is, by their fruit shall you know them. And the obvious thing there is the Lord is telling you how to judge other people. But what you're saying makes it plain that this is something we can apply to ourselves as well. That you think you have good intentions, well, look at your own fruits to see what you really like.
Yeah.
See what kind of a tree you are by looking at your own fruits, not by what you think your good intentions are.
Yes. Yeah, I do think over time. Because there is that whole thing, well, what about hypocrites? You know, well, and I think it is an over time thing. Hypocrites can keep up a masquerade if they're really good, even to the end of life in this world. But in the next life, that ability to masquerade falls away. And so, but I think most of the time, again, unless there are some people that make a practice out of it, but most of the time, if you have a friend, over the course of 5 years, by the way they treat you, you're going to get a feeling of, are they good for me? Or do we bring out the worst in each other? Or do they actually intend me harm every time we get together? It begins to, you find out that in most cases what a person is like by the things that they do. And I think it's because of that principle that really what we intend, if we really intend it, is going to find a way into action.
It's interesting that the Bible, which I know, follows the beware of wolves and sheep's clothing.
Yes. So he addresses the appearance and says, well, and the way you tell the difference is. So it's more than just the facade. There seems to be a deeper reach when you're looking at the fruits rather than just the sheep's clothing.
Yes.
I'm just going to keep repeating what she just said. It's important here. I think the only way act perceives willing follows really works is if you add that idea of shunning evil as a sins to it. Otherwise, you're going to get into this sort of, you know, again, the empty acts that have no real meaning. But if you're forcing yourself to act even when you don't feel like it, and at the same time recognizing those internal evil inclinations and trying to shun them, that's when I think the act, the willing will then follow. So just to sort of repeat what she said about that.
Yeah. Well, that law of divine providence says that as we shun evils as sins in act, the Lord will remove the desire to sin. So, again, the actions do matter. So we've all got it. You've all got the do how now. But really think about this. I encourage you in your friendships, in your marriages. I think it's very easy for us to bemoan the situations that we're in. And I often think if you look closely at what you can do, you can often make many inroads. And the question is, whether you will actually act. I love that. What did the Lord say in the Gospels? If you know these things, that there's the happier ye if you do them, and then there's the if you know my words, why do you not do the things that I say, or something like that. Yes, yeah. And I think that is so often the case in relationships where often if we take a close look, we simply need to do the things we already know that we should be doing and stop doing the things we already know we shouldn't be doing.
What cautionary note from working with people, one couple we're working with, being men, if you go, if you're in trouble and you know what you're doing, ask your wife if it's really what you want. If she wants done. Yeah, one couple worked with, the guy was doing everything. He was back. He was monitoring. He was fishing. He was doing everything. And yet it wasn't what where the wife wanted to connect with. So there's a cautionary to do. You know, check with what's going on. Don't just become a doer and think that's going to fix it.
Yeah, that's that feedback loop of looking in your understanding and then practicing it and seeing if it's having the desired effect. How many people have some familiarity with the languages of love? Yeah, that's an interesting book, and I think it ties into the DLW 47 of To Feel the Joy of Another as Joy in Oneself, that is loving. Looking for what makes them happy, not you. And I remember a classmate telling me that I had that passage backwards, that I was viewing it as to have my wife feel my joy in her is loving. And that's not how it's actually worded, but all right. Well, thank you very much, and have a good afternoon.
Is is tender with his wife and attentive and doing all those things and swindling his partner. It's what do you, what